Broadcasting live from Beer House at the Park outside of T-Mobile Arena, it's Cofield and Company.
Rodgers dancing, fires downfield for Adams. He's got it! Touchdown!
We're going to have a mixed bag for the next 15 minutes. Nick Gismondi's in with us, one of the great TV voices of the Vegas Golden Knights. We're out here at the park. You heard it. God, I want a drink.
It's
hard
tough.
Being around people who are throwing them back. I know.
Oh, and they're tempting with them.
Maybe
too.
The last hour.
Yeah.
The chicken and waffles place up the road. What is it, Bruxy's?
Oh, Bruxy's. So
they do
good.
A pretty decent job with a Michelada.
They do a good job with the chicken sandwich too.
The chicken's pretty good.
It's fantastic.
Just beware though. You got to have the little hand wipes. The syrup.
Yeah.
A little sticky.
Have you had one from Bruxy? It's a chicken sandwich on a waffle.
I have, yes.
It's incredible.
There's nothing like chicken and waffles. There's a really good chicken and waffles place in Los Angeles that I used to go to all the time when I lived there, too. But, yeah, it's hard to pass up a good chicken and waffle.
A
come
good
on.
One?
I was like, come on, a place?
Roscoe's?
You can mention it.
All right, yeah.
We all know Roscoe's.
Okay, I was talking about Roscoe's.
We come from
okay.
the streets. We
all
know
right,
Roscoe's.
Just making sure. I didn't know. A copyright infringement. I didn't want to upset Bruxy's down the road there, you know?
Yeah, it's a good point, actually.
You guys have so many sponsors. I didn't know if
Bruxy's was on board, I'd be like, nope! Exclusive chicken and waffle joint.
Don't mention any others. There's none.
Have you actually paid for a meal in this town? Because I see you doing all these, you're traipsing around town getting free meals. It's pretty good.
Listen, I'll tell you something right now. It is awesome to be really well taken care of, and I think it speaks. My favorite, you're going to hate me because I know I'm always positive, but my favorite thing about this town is the community, man. I love it. I've never felt more at home in my entire life.
My problem isn't with your positivity today.
Yeah. What is it?
What is going on your cuff, on the shirt sleeve here? Do you have branded?
Do you
have a branded shirt?
No.
None of your business.
No, it's just the embroidery on there. What do they call that?
Come on, man.
It's NG. I couldn't go my middle initial.
Monogrammed, right?
It's monogrammed. Yeah, that's it. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you, Chrissy.
This is outrageous.
Chrissy's rich. She comes from a rich background.
No,
she
you know
knows
what it is?
What's going on with
this
the
was
NG
actually
on the
a wedding
shirt.
Present.
Chapel Hill isn't rich.
A wedding present. But okay. I can't put my middle initial on there because my middle name is Andrew. Therefore, it would be
Nag.
It would say
that's
Nag.
Awesome.
That's not good.
No, it would be very probably accurate about my my personality. I just can't bring myself to it. So.
So I mean we've talked about it and joked about it, but the season's almost over.
Yeah.
You know, first full season, kind of doing everything and being a part of it. What has this kind of journey been like for you? And I know it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity.
Just let him answer. You don't have to.
But I'm saying.
I know it's going to be positive.
Over the top positive.
You're not
going to
make him answer negatively. Just let him answer.
No, there wouldn't be a negative. I would be honest. I think that's the one thing I am. I know I'm positive, but that's only because that is the honesty. I this year has been. It truly is a dream come true for me. 23 years in this business now, and I've never, ever wanted anything. This was always the goal when I got started. Back when I was doing high school radio at 15 years old, the goal was to be with an NHL team in some full-time capacity. So to be able to pull it off, it took a little while, but to be here and to be well-received and to get to hang out with you guys all the time, for me, it's honestly cool.
Well, that last part.
It's really
seems
cool.
Seems like the worst part.
It's really cool.
That's a nightmare.
No, I think I love it. I absolutely love it.
Adam, what was your goal?
My goal for the season?
Yeah. No. Your goal
in life?
In terms of career.
In life.
Where do you want to be?
I hoped one day to be able to interview Nick Gismondi. That was what I was hoping for. So mission accomplished like 30 times this year.
This is great. This is good.
Should I take offense to this one? I am pushing 50, and I will often have people ask me, and they know I do Las Vegas radio, and they're like, what's your goal? Where do you want to be? I'm like, I'm almost 50! Like, this is...
Like, I'm doing it,
yes,
I think.
I like this.
I like this.
I don't know. There's always this weird
this.
Perception that, like, Vegas isn't big time, and it is.
Oh, it's huge
like,
time.
Just I don't want to rip people in the audience. Just because you don't want to be here, I do.
Yeah, I love it. I
like it here.
I do really, really love this community, and I think that's probably my favorite part about it. I really love being here and being with a fan base that is so ravenous for this team and that supports these guys so much. And I know it's the last home game of the regular season at T-Mobile. I've been to a lot of arenas. I've been to the Olympics a dozen times. I've never, ever seen an atmosphere like this. It's insane.
Adam Hill's the worst person to talk to about this because he's desensitized. But one of the guys on the show, Ryan McKinnell, said the other day, and we're talking to Nick Gismondi, Ryan said the Edmonton game, even though it was very sluggish throughout, he thought the crowd was awesome, and he called it a celebration of hockey. People were just happy to be there. Ooh, he's smiling. Is that too cheesy? Were you like,
I'm rubbing off on Ryan.
Apparently. I was going to say.
I feel like that's something I would have said.
That's awesome. Nick's like, well, it was kind of good. I don't know what the hell. I mean, you know, Ryan may throw back some additional help to make him happy. Maybe that was the reason for that tweet. But, man, he was fired up. Didn't feel like that against Edmonton, huh?
I think the Edmonton game was definitely a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I can't take anything away from the way this crowd has responded. But I'll tell you what, they drive the emotions of this team. I've seen it. Like, you can see it, especially towards the end of games. I see when these guys, if it's a close game, the crowd gets into it big time. You see the boys respond on the ice. And listen, they'll tell you. They'll tell you off camera. They'll tell you when they know they're not being necessarily quoted how much the crowd means to them. It has an impact.
Adam, what you don't realize, and what a lot of people don't realize in the media, is say there's 13,000, 12,000 that go to every game. There's 4,000 that may get to go to three games a year.
Yeah.
So for them, it's a fresh thing. Like, I've gone to three games as a fan.
Yeah.
And every time I go, I'm like, wow, this is freaking awesome. Like, I'm not desensitized. I'm like, this is freaking awesome. I mean, the flip side of being extremely popular in a market like this is the tickets are expensive, too.
Yeah, they are.
So, I mean, this is a big moment for a lot of people when they get to go to their one or two or three games a year.
And listen, that's the case tonight. I've had multiple people come up to me and tell me that they're going to their first Vegas Golden Knights game tonight. Had it happen walking over, you know, to the rink when I saw you guys earlier today, two or three people. First game of the year. And then there's so many people that come down here and just come and hang out because of this amazing atmosphere that want to go watch it in the park or out in front of the arena too. So people are sometimes just here for the atmosphere because they know what they're getting from it.
Fan appreciation night. Do you know any of the details? What's going on?
They're doing the jersey off their back auction. I know that's usually the staple.
What's that?
You can bid on the jerseys that they're wearing, and then they'll sign them.
Right after the game. And you get to go down on. I believe if they're doing this the way everybody else does it, you get to go down onto the ice and they skate right over to you, take the jersey right off their back, and hand it to you, sign it. It's pretty cool.
Can I really ruin this? Like, be the whining guy about this?
Do you have to ask?
Yeah. Do you know how long it takes now to go for them to open the locker room after this event? Like, the deadline is so ridiculous. I'll be standing there freaking out. It'll be 10:22. My story's due at 10:25, and they still won't be in the locker room yet. So thanks, fans.
Do you want the official wording on everything tonight?
Yes, of course.
Fans in attendance will receive a special giveaway presented by Toyota, which is a replica of the Vegas Golden Knights helmet that the players skate through to take the ice before the games.
Wow.
So you're getting one of those. Then it's the multiple prizes to select fans in attendance, including a $50,000 worth of flight vouchers presented by Allegiant, VIP experiences at Cirque du Soleil, free donuts for a year presented by Krispy Kreme, and dinner for two at one of two of Wynn's finest restaurants. And then, of course, the jersey off their backs, where players will take the ice after the game and hand-deliver game-worn those who played jerseys to select winners.
That's great.
And tonight, outside, after the game, the Spasmatics are playing. And I know a lot of people are like, who?
Yeah.
I freaking love those guys.
I've spent many
a drunken night watching them.
You love them. Not surprisingly, I hate them.
It's 80s music.
It's great. No, they put on a great show.
They're funny guys.
They are. The jokes, just stop with the jokes. Keep the music going, stop with the jokes.
Same thing. A lot of people are seeing the jokes for the first time. How do we do a show together?
I'm not sure.
I'm so happy.
The yin and the yang.
I'm so happy and glass just overflowing.
You worked before me. I made you be happy.
This is a little reminiscent of Brad and I, to be quite honest. But I've turned Brad. I've gotten Brad to be very, very positive lately. I turned him into an old-fashioned drinker. It's fantastic.
That's good.
We all went to dinner last night. His mom and my mom and dad all went to dinner last night, and they all clicked too. So it was a lot of fun and a lot of ribbing on the boys. So.
Can I tell you this? And the audience will love this. It's not just here. It's anytime I'm anywhere, because after the game the other night.
Yeah.
If you remember, you did the intermission interviews.
Yeah, I did. Yes.
And Allie was up in your spot.
Yeah.
And so I came down to you after the game in the concourse. Your parents were there.
Yep.
Lovely, lovely folks.
Yeah.
And I walked up and said, the intermission reports were much better today with Allie doing them than you. Just walked away.
Really?
Yeah. But I mean, I was obviously joking. I hope he knows that I was joking.
I know I was joking.
But
Adam Hill might have angered Mama Gismondi. And she's Sicilian. So, yeah.
You're such
a
jerk.
Completely out of context. Just walked up. The intermission reports were much better tonight. Kept walking. That's how I roll. Can't let people's ego get too big.
Nick, let's get to a little hockey on the ice real quick here.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you look at the end of the season? Because it's been really weird. They've been sort of stuck in a spot where they didn't think they could get the two, and then they actually could have. But they had losing streak, winning streak, losing streak, now finally getting a win. It's been a weird close to the season.
Yeah, we're close for sure, but I think that's kind of how it goes when you're a team who's in that spot where you're just not sure where you can go and you're moving up and you're down, and then you had a little bit of injuries plaguing you there, where, so you had guys kind of in and out of the lineup, and I know that's something that happens to these guys a lot, and they do a pretty good job of playing through it, but it's hard. You get into these spots, and Brad was talking about it the other day, where you're at that point in the season where you know every game matters, but your mentality is telling you that no, these last couple games don't necessarily matter, even though they do matter, because you want to be hitting the postseason at your absolute best. I don't think it's anything abnormal. I think last year, obviously, the Vegas Golden Knights were rolling a little bit harder towards the end because they were pushing hard into it, but I think that this is a team that's starting to trend back up. They beat a real good Edmonton team, and that is a good Edmonton team. There's some weapons on that team, and they managed to hold them to a goal. So I think that it's a good thing. You got Marc-Andre Fleury back and starting tonight, so you're going to see an exciting game, and I think it's good that they're playing Arizona, because you've got Arizona, who's a desperate team, going to push them. So it's a good test for the Vegas Golden Knights to kind of come in with a little bit more heat and try and push a little harder here.
Can I make the case that I'm criticized for being down on them all the time? I actually think they're the best team in the West right now.
I don't disagree.
And it's I know people
why?
Say
I got to hear why.
I think when they are healthy and when everybody's on the ice, and obviously Fleury's been out a couple weeks, he's given a chance to heal up. When everybody is out there, and Stastny's missed a couple days, Belmar missed a couple days, but their full lineup, their 1-4 lines are incredible. The way that they can score, any of them can score. The first line has been on fire. The second line with Stone has been great. The third line now has Tuck and Eakin on it. When they play together, they're very good. That four lines really is unmatched in the Western Conference. And Fleury kind of makes up for any deficiencies on the defensive end. They've got defensemen that can push up and make plays on offense and get the breaks going. So I think they're the most complete team right now when everybody's on the ice, and I think everybody will be healthy for the playoffs.
Agreed.
Okay. You were giving him a look like...
Agreed.
He knows what he's talking about.
Agreed.
No.
So he knows hockey.
I think it's deep. I think that's the biggest strength that the Vegas Golden Knights have is their depth through four lines. And defensively, I think they're solid as well. And then again, you have Marc-Andre Fleury, who's just an absolute rock star backstop. I like it. I really like the way this team is built. I've said it before. This is a better team than they were last year.
Nick, we're going to let you run. Can I tell you, if you want a party atmosphere, we are
cool.
Getting a whiff of
cool.
Barbecue, weed, and watching people drink beers.
Yeah, it's awesome.
This is the greatest day of my life.
If we actually asked for beers right now, about 10 people would hook us up, but I don't think we can. See, heads are already turning. Yeah, we can't.
I can.
Yeah, never mind.
You can't
somebody
throw
bring,
one back.
Can somebody bring Steve Cofield a beer, please?
They're like, who?
Somebody
want to get the TV guy a
somebody
beer.
Get Cofield a beer for me, please.
Nick has to do TV,
on me.
So he can't. But, I only have to write. Who cares what I write?
I'm asking our wonderful fans if somebody could please buy Adam Hill and Steve Cofield a beer for
just
me.
Steve.
Let's take care of these guys.
You can drink it up.
Do it.
All right, Nick, we appreciate it. Have fun tonight, and we'll be out here during the playoffs. Thank you.
Thanks so much for everything. I'll see you guys in the postseason.
We'll come back with a little more UNLV spring practice setup as the color voice of the Rebels and former quarterback for UNLV, Caleb Herring, is up.
Cofield and Company will be back in minutes right here on ESPN Las Vegas.
Can't touch this.
Broadcasting live from Beer House at the Park outside of T-Mobile Arena as the Vegas Golden Knights prepare to take on the Coyotes. It's Cofield and Company.
On the ensuing draw, Oilers dump it in. Here's the horn. All over. Final score, Vegas 3, Edmonton 1.
Man, it is freaking packed out here, and we are like 2.5 hours from the game. We're just minutes away from getting into a little Rebel football UNLV spring showcase this weekend. One last thing from Nick Ismondi. He's nice enough to come back. He's a busy guy, TV guy on all these VGK games. Chrissy sent out a GIF of you getting belted in the face. I think that was rugby. What is going on? I have to hear about this.
That's my good buddy Todd Clever, who's the captain of the U.S. rugby team. And we did this thing. So obviously before I came – I worked with Vegas. I was with NBC Sports Network, and we did a little segment we called Train Like a Champion, where I went out with Olympic athletes or athletes in sports that NBC covered, and I tried to do what they do to show how hard it is. And so we were doing a thing with Todd Clever, who I said was the captain of the U.S. rugby team, and he was going to teach me how to play rugby. Well, yeah, so he was hitting me, and he was being nice, and it clearly I felt like it didn't look real. And I said to Todd, and I said to the director, I said, does this look real? And they all kind of looked at me, and they shook their head no. And I looked at Todd, and I said, okay, you're going to have to hit me. And he goes, wait, hit you? And I'm like, yeah, hit me. So the gif that Chrissy put out, that's me getting stiff-armed by him. But about 2 minutes later in the piece, he actually full-on tackles me when I received a catch. And Todd came down on top of me, had me by about 180 pounds, and he broke two of my ribs. So I broke, all in all, with NBC Sports in 12 years, I broke three ribs and three fingers. Two ribs that day with Todd Clever, another one in a bike accident in Napa.
Did the hit at least look real this time?
Oh, yeah, it looked real. If you watch that segment, you can YouTube it. It's Sideline Reporter Gets Sidelined, and it's Nick Gismondi versus Todd Clever. And I get absolutely smoked.
Did you tone it down after that?
No, I mean, I kept it going for TV. The worst part was that the last shot of the piece was me going for a try. And when you get a try in rugby, most of them are a jump across the line, even if you're free and clear of your opponent. So that's a full arm stretch out Superman dive into the end zone to tag her down. And Todd told me that I had to do it. So he threw me the ball, and I ran with two broken ribs and Supermaned myself into the end zone. And you see me impact the ground on camera and get up, and I'm doing everything I can not to cry on television.
Now,
it's bad.
Now, I've seen some odd things that you've done now with the show.
Yeah.
It's a good show. It's exciting.
Great. I have fun on it, Nightlife.
Are you tightroping? What are you doing? I saw it on Instagram. It's crazy.
On the one this week. So we shot over on the Ka stage, Allie and I, and the Ka stage is cool because it's like they don't have a standard stage, right, where it's just a permanent fixture. They have two giant platforms that move in and out, and then they have five smaller platforms that come up out of like nowhere, and there's like a 30-foot drop off of these things that the actors fall into a giant airbag when they're doing the actual show. So we shot on that stage. We didn't do anything too risque. Apparently they wouldn't let me, but I was joking earlier that it might as well. I mean, I've been in worse spots.
That show Friday nights, right?
That is on Friday night. Yep, so it'll be the season finale.
Check that out tomorrow. You also, I think you were a knight at one point, which is disturbing.
That was fun. We shot over at the Tournament of Kings over at the Excalibur. Got all knighted up. It was awesome. Me and Allie got the sword fight.
You didn't keep the sword, did you?
No, Allie, I think, wanted to. Allie might have kept hers.
Well, she still brags about her work as a knight. Like, she could actually do it as a professional.
She was good. She did this crazy thing. She did this really awesome hair flip. And then she did this crazy cartwheel with her shield and her sword that she stood up and landed perfectly in a fighting position. And I was like, okay, don't mess with Allie Losoff.
Smart. She's
awesome to work with. And we had a lot of fun on that show this year. We got to do some cool stuff. I think probably my favorite was getting to swim with the Dolphins, though, over at the Mirage. So.
I think pools are better without animals in them.
Those animals won't eat you.
You never know.
They're loving, and they're like giant puppies. A lot like you.
I'll take your word for it.
And agile in the water.
You're talking to the wrong guy. He's the least adventurous, risk-taking guy we know.
Agile.
He's afraid of everything.
I feel like I'd like to hang out with the Dolphins, though.
They're cool.
I think they'd like me.
Go over there and see Maverick and Osborne. Those are my boys. They're Dolphins. Tell them you know me.
Maverick and Osborne.
Yeah, I love them.
Completely ridiculous.
I've been back once or twice.
Nick, you are the best. Thank you for possibly treating us to some brewskis.
There may have
later.
Been beers
later.
Involved.
Later.
Later. Yeah. Not now.
Yeah, later, after the show and after a deadline.
Yes. Yeah. No, right. We're professionals. No, none of us would drink while working.
Yes.
Have fun tonight.
Hey, thank you guys, as always, for having me.
Thanks, man.
All right. Dolphins. We could set up the Dolphins at some point.
That's all right. Nick did it. He did it for us. He told us all about it, and we're good. We don't have to do it anymore.
Come on. Do the Dolphins, please.
No. It's not going to happen.
Now he is greeted by a throng of faithful fans.
The adoring fans are just all over.
Yes. So you won't be at the UNLV spring practice, huh?
Oh, not. I'll be in LA.
That's too bad.
I know. I was there last year. I'd like to be there again. It's a good time to get out there and check out the team, see the development of the players and everything else. And as you mentioned earlier, the sale of all the athletic goods is great.
You love bargains.
It's great.
Caleb Harrington's with us, former quarterback at UNLV. Of course, he's the analyst on the radio broadcast. He'll be out with myself, with Tyler Bischoff, as we'll broadcast the spring showcase from 11:30 to 1:30. Saturday. Caleb, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Steve?
I'm good. What have you been doing? I don't think people know what you do outside of your great football analyst work. Tell people.
Right. It's a mystery. I tried to keep it a mystery.
No, I actually
– you ousted me. Thanks. But, no, I'm in law enforcement. I actually work in corrections at the city jail, and that's what I do from a day-to-day basis when I'm not doing football, when I'm not doing the good stuff. I'm trying to help the community in my own little way. But, yeah, I've been in law enforcement ever since I graduated. So it's been good to me, and I'm loving it. It lets me, you know, do my side gig or my real passion, which is talking football with you guys all day.
How much – this is a weird question. How much do you think about honing your skills as an analyst in between seasons? I mean, you're a busy guy. I just wonder. I wonder what analysts think now, especially since the bar has been raised so much by a guy like Tony Romo. When you watch him and you're like, man, this guy, talk about the insight during a game. I wonder what Romo has done for all analysts on football games.
You know what? For me personally, it's actually kind of opened my eyes to what I guess that you analysts could do. I mean, like, there was kind of a script of analysts, like the way to analyze football, to broadcast a game. There's kind of a script for so long, and you grew up like imitating that, I guess. You know, like, everybody played, you know, analysts in their own fantasy of their own 5 seconds ago. But there's like a script that you went by, and Tony Romo kind of busted it up for the actual football geeks like me that play the game that have that different angle, and he showed that it can be received well. So I like look at him like kind of like you know, you don't have to follow that script. You just talk football the way you know it, and it can come off as a positive experience for viewers. And that's kind of the way he's been received, and that's the way I look at it. He's kind of opened a door for me to, like, look at broadcasting in a different way where I can just kind of be an educator and hold people's hands and walk them through things. And if I see it, why not say it? It's a little bit different, you know, with radio as opposed to what he does on the television broadcast. But, you know, watching him has kind of been an inspiration for me that, you know, broadcasting can be something that I do hone and become progressively better at throughout the time that I'm allowed to do it.
You get any feedback from the players, especially the quarterbacks? Will they walk up on you and go, hey, Caleb, easy, bro? Because I'll tell you, when I do the games with Caleb, so I get to hear all of it, but if you listen to Caleb, he is fair, but he is really hard on the quarterbacks. Like, if they're missing whatever they're missing, you call them out. I wonder if any of those guys are like, Caleb, easy.
I've never had a current player say anything to me, which is good because they shouldn't be listening to me anyway. So that's always a positive that they don't say anything. Like, Amani's never like been like, hey man, that was kind of mean what you said back there. But, you know, I have a critical eye for quarterbacks because I play the position, so I kind of see it through their eyes and I know what they're seeing and I know what they should be able to do at this point, I think, in their career. So I get a little bit more critical on them, but. No, I never have received any or heard any. They may be, you know, behind closed doors and not to my face talking about it and how I should be a little nicer, but
Caleb,
I've never received it.
How about listeners? Because I've actually had listeners come up to me at games and they're like, Caleb is too tough on these guys. Of course, I defend you, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Thanks. But, no, I have gotten that, you know, I'm kind of tough on God, is that I'm tough on them, and that the person that told me this actually appreciated how tough I was, because it was like they didn't want it to be sugar-coated, and it didn't feel like I was, you know, being a homer or babying, you know, because, you know, sometimes it needs to be said. And I don't know how out of line I get. I just kind of say it when I feel it. But there's certain things that, yeah, sometimes I'm like, yeah, I was kind of hard on them on that play. But like I said, football is a tough sport, and if they couldn't handle it as players, then they're not prepared for the position of quarterback anyway, because it's a tough position, and you got to have thick skin for it.
We've got spring game coming up. I just wanted to get your thoughts kind of right now as we sit a few months out from the start of camp and the season and everything else. How big of a year is this in UNLV football history?
It is really, really huge. I think it's, one of the first years that you've had some consistency. I mean, with Tony and his regime, it's been a long time since the whole entire coaching staff has returned at UNLV. And this is going to be the first time it's happened with Tony. So it's huge in that aspect. It's huge for what the future has in store for as far as moving into the stadium, the new facility, all the things that are kind of trying to take the program on upswing outside of actual wins and losses. Like, there's so much going right for UNLV right now in terms of football and the program outside of the actual field of play. So it's time that the play and the win-loss column starts to match that. And I think this season is kind of that turning point. Like, if the wins and losses don't match, it's going to really devastate the fan base, the program, the future, and all that stuff. It could put a kind of a damper on those other external things that are really moving the program in the right direction. So I think it's huge. I think it's one of those critical points in a program where you kind of, you know, you measure yourself on your merit. And if they don't deserve it, if they don't earn it this season, then a lot of people are going to be solidified in their doubts, and there's going to be a really negative cast over UNLV football for, you know, the foreseeable future, even though, you know, the positive things off the field have been coming to fruition. It's going to seem like it's kind of not worth it or wasted on a team that hasn't produced on the field. But I think it's a huge season. I think there's opportunity. I think with just as bad as it can go just as good the other way. Like, if things go great this season, it matches the progress of the new facilities, the new stadium that they're going to be playing in, you know, the Raider/Rebel stadium. It's going to make those things even better. It's going to complement those in the right way if UNLV can have a great season this year.
Well, what would, to you, represent having a great season?
A bowl game. Right now, UNLV, not a barely bowl-eligible season, but a bowl game, a solid, we made a bowl game, we're in contention, we're trying to figure out which bowl we're going to be playing in, who we're going to be matched up with. That, to me, is a successful season for UNLV right now. And that's the kind of the bar that I think Tony's been setting for himself throughout his tenure at UNLV. Is that's kind of the goal he's trying to get to where UNLV isn't surprised by winning, or it's not unexpected that they're at six games. They shouldn't be fighting for the sixth game, you know, in week 11. It should be one of those things where they're in place to make a run at a bowl game pretty early here. And also, honestly, competing in the Mountain West. I think this year they kind of got a tougher draw with the schedule, playing some of the top teams in the conference who've been perennially the top teams. But I think you kind of want to measure yourself against the conference as well. That's going to play a big part into it too, where you end up at the end of things in conference play. So, but that to me is the definite goal, a bowl game, a bowl appearance, and a comfortable one too. Maybe a 7-win season, 8-win season if you play your cards right.
It's Caleb Herring. You can hear Caleb with myself and Tyler Bischoff Saturday, 11:30 starts the broadcast around the spring showcase for UNLV. You know, it's interesting, last year much of the season revolved around Armani Rogers and his health. There was really three different seasons, you know, solid start, you know, kind of a struggling middle, and then strong end to the season. So that begs the question, how do they run an offense where you want to use your best weapon most effectively, and that is getting Armani Rogers, you know, out onto the field, you know, having him run, but you also have to protect him because he's gotten dinged up the last two seasons. What do they do offensively?
It is the biggest problem or you know, conundrum for UNLV right now. Like, a lot of it's going to have to come down to Armani and his own individual ability to keep himself healthy. And that's unfair to him in some ways, because his talent is what it is. And he can affect the game the way he can, and that's the best way he knows how. And it's probably the best way to use him in the grand scheme of things. So it's going to be up to him to kind of measure his own pace. The training staff's going to have their work cut out on him. I mean, they're going to have all hands on deck making sure he's in treatment, rehab throughout the season, because it's a long season. You know, week three, you might be feeling fine. And let's face it, that Arkansas State injury was kind of a freak accident. It didn't really, you know, an injured toe isn't necessarily what you expect from a guy that runs the way he does. You think, you know, maybe a banged up shoulder or ribs or something like that, just taking a hit. But, you know, it was a toe last year. There's not really much you can do as a player or a coaching staff to a sideline hit ends up taking out his toe for most of the season. So, but yeah, it's gonna be a joint effort by the coaching staff, the training staff, and most importantly on Armani's part to make sure that he can stay healthy for the season. And also, I think Max last year did a great job, but it's gonna be down to having a plan if things don't go the way you want. I think having a number two quarterback that is a starter is what Max was last year, tried to come off the bench and do his best to keep the team afloat. I think that's going to be a focus this year too. And it's already been talked about a lot with Oblad and Gillum competing this year for the second spot and seeing who's going to be number two on the depth chart come fall. So there's a whole bunch of different things that go into it. But it's going to be tough on the coaches to try to manage his minutes kind of in a way. You think about that more in terms of the NBA, but to manage his touches, to manage his carries in a way that he's still effective, but you want to keep him healthy for a full season. It's been a long time also since a quarterback has started an entire season for UNLV, and that could go a long way to determining whether or not they make a bowl game this year, is having Armani on the field for a full 12-game season.
The run game was affected adversely when Armani went out. Production went down, even with Lexington Thomas, as awesome as he was, and he got dinged up as the season went along. Speaking of Lex, he's gone. He's probably on to the NFL. How do you think the running back mix is going to work itself out?
I think it's going to be great. I think, obviously, missing Lexington is going to be a huge blow, but it's always been, UNLV, under Tony, has always been kind of a running back by committee. And I think there's times where Lex just becomes explosive and made those huge plays that automatically drew your attention. But guys like Xavier Campbell the rest of the stable are going to have to step up and fill that load. And it's going to be running back by committee, which I think Coach Sanchez has done a great job of kind of having that attitude about it, even though Lex was obviously the shining star in the backfield. Let's remember, he wasn't the starting guy when he first got. Charles Williams was the number one guy at one point with Tony Sanchez before his injury. So there's things that they can do to kind of tweak their lineup when you have a stable of three, four running backs. Just signing one, a JUCO transfer, so obviously he's going to be looked at to produce right away. So the running back stable is going to be kind of running back by committee, and that's going to be part of replacing Lex. And then obviously having Armani back there, you basically are operating with two running backs at any given play anyway. So the running game I think will be fine, although you will miss Lex and his explosive, exciting plays in a big way this season.
So the running backs, we're going to be watching them. The other unit that you're going to be, not that we're going to find out a whole lot in the spring practice, but the other unit, I would assume it's on defense. What's the unit you're going to be looking at least for the eye test and kind of see, you know, what the volume looks like and the bodies look like moving forward? Is it defensive backs? Is it linebackers? Defensive line?
I would say it's a mix of two things. I think it's because of replacing who you're replacing at linebacker would be the spot that I'm, because Bailey Lalonghi was a guy that was, you know, kind of Mr. Do-It-All and a really strong presence in the linebacking core, and replacing him, I want to see how Farrell Hester develops at that spot. He's been working hard at, you know, improving his speed, lateral quickness, and he had a nose for the football, recovered a bunch of fumbles last season, but you want to see him be able to step into that and command the defense at linebacker. So that's huge for defense, obviously. But the position that obviously I think hurt the Rebels defensively the most was the cornerback position. I think that's something that has been addressed in recruiting. Also signing a couple of guys late here to fill that void in the secondary. But trying to get the cornerbacks to be able to be in position and have that confidence to make plays on the ball. It was a reoccurring theme all season last year of being in position and just not having the confidence to turn around and play the ball. And that really hurt the Rebels in a lot of ways on those third and long situations, giving up big plays in the secondary. So obviously the secondary is going to be the area that I want to see how they have progressed and what improvements they've made. Like you said, we're not going to see much in the spring game. It's more about the mechanisms of getting lined up, getting the feel for actually being under the microscope and playing a game, seeing if you can execute, communicate the calls, and that kind of thing. So maybe not as much physical playmaking we're going to see at the spring game, but you'll be able to see guys and their confidence and getting lined up and communicating in the secondary. That's going to be probably one of the biggest things that I look for on the defensive side of the ball, outside of like the running back situation offensively, of course, and Armani and his improvements. But we're going to want to see how the defensive secondary communicates and plays the ball in the air on Saturday.
Caleb, you mentioned earlier the facilities and everything improving around the program and taking that next step. But as somebody who played, can you just tell people how important that is? We know what it can do for recruiting, but just for the guys that are in the program to have that new facility opening, how big is that going to be?
Well, it's huge because it instills a sense of pride in you instantly without having to work for it, without having to sweat, bleed, you know, anything like that on the field. You have something to take pride in about your organization, about your program. So you come into the facility and you know, it's terrible. It's a drag. and this has been proven in just community policing and all the other areas of life too, but especially in football when there's a camaraderie that needs to be built. If there's nothing that you can take pride in initially when you come onto campus, there's no designated football locker room. The locker rooms that you do have at the stadium aren't up to par with the rest of the nation. Then you instantly don't have that sense of pride. Like, this is what I'm playing for. This is, you know, the university has this support behind me, and I'm proud to wear that UNLV across my chest. You don't get that initially. And, I mean, you can work to get it still in other ways, and there obviously are other things to have pride in when you're playing for a collegiate football team. But one of the easiest ways, especially with young, impressionable teenage kids, 18, 19-year-olds, to do it is with a wow factor. And I think the facilities give UNLV that wow factor that they've been missing for a very, very long time. So for recruiting purposes, for pride in performance, for taking care of yourself, for wanting to be at the facility, for wanting to go to practice, for wanting to get up and go to the weight room because you have shiny things, everything's new, it looks nice, there's a, you know, barbershop, there's all this stuff at your facility, you just want to be there more. And wanting to be there goes a long way to actually producing while you're there. So I think as a player, it would be huge to have something that you take pride in, a facility that you take pride in, and want to do it justice and really increase your drive to want to work at it if you have, you know, this high-tech, state-of-the-art equipment and facilities to work out in.
Caleb, great job. We will see you on Saturday. Thank you.
All right, see you there.
There you go. Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback, now on the radio broadcast. What do you think of what he said at the end there about kids are down with the shiny new things and it gets them fired up to go to the weight room, gets them fired up to watch film? Because my guess is there are listeners who are like, that's ridiculous.
I mean,
you got a scholarship, work, some work ethic. Now, I'll let you answer in a second. Be honest with yourself and the audience. If your workplace is a complete crap hole, are you motivated?
I mean, I think I can actually answer this question very well.
Do you think a lot of people lose motivation when their office, when their facilities suck?
Sure they do. I've witnessed it. No question about it. But, I mean, it's also sometimes I don't think people understand, you know, how much you need motivation and that sort of thing along the lines. I was actually talking to Nate Schmidt yesterday about the game that the Knights played at Calgary in November, and they got destroyed. They gave up 5 goals in the first period. They lost 7-2. And he told one of his assistant coaches after the game, man, we needed that. We definitely needed that. That's a big one. Like, that's going to wake us up. We're going to play well. And he said the response from the coach is, you shouldn't need that. And I'm sure a lot of people kind of are in agreement with that. Like, you're a professional athlete. Why do you need that? He's like, that sent a message. And they went on to win 5 games in a row after that.
Yeah.
It was a wake-up call. So I think it's not understand motivation and how things can, like, it can help you
that,
and drive
but
you.
But it's that way for everyone. Anyone who has a job, you have to get motivated every day. And some people, you know, some days people are just not motivated. All right, we're going to get into the Big Five here in about 10 minutes. Really important stuff. There was quite the rant by one of the Final Four women's coaches that we're going to get to. Hey, Chrissy, you fired up? By the way, is that second TV in the studio up yet? You ready to go?
I've got my computer.
You're juiced up?
If you had a second TV, would you be real motivated to work?
Always.
It would take Chrissy to the next level. It absolutely would. All right, Muffet McGraw rant about 10 minutes away, and we'll go through some of the numbers on a Thursday night.
Visit Cofield's Corner on lvsportsnetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
You think there are any handicappers out there who are like, you know what, the Yankees are beat up right now. The numbers are getting depressed. I think there's value. I'm going to recommend the Yankees every game.
Probably.
Okay, that's not working right now. They did win today. They won today. The Yankees with their beat up lineup, which, by the way, I was talking about how pathetic the lineup was 2 days ago. Yesterday's lineup, when you spend that much money on a roster, your lineup, even without five guys, is still pretty good. So today they were -215. Now, keep in mind, they've got the benefit of going against two of the worst teams in baseball coming out of the gates, which actually for bettors is a negative because you've had to pay so much money. Yeah. So long story short, they're now 3-4. They're still dead last in baseball in terms of money. If you bet to win 100 on every game right now, it's 7 games in. You've lost $766. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Not a good start to the season on ROI. It'll turn around, I'm pretty sure. And today, by the way, they covered on the run line. So you could have really made a little bit of it back there by playing that instead. But, yeah, the Yankees, not great. And I'm offended that you called the Tigers one of the worst teams in baseball. They're above 500.
Under 75 wins for the year. Yes?
75? Wasn't their number was like mid-60s.
Well, they're off to a good start. I'm going to raise the number.
No.
Well, then why do you have a problem with
like over
calling them one of the worst teams in baseball? They are.
Take the over 66.
I told you last year, and a lot of how I think about baseball now, sadly, is fantasy baseball. The Detroit Tigers, for me, are just a non-entity because I never have any Tigers.
Nico.
There's like three guys worth a damn on the team.
They got Nico. He had a big game today.
Yeah.
I was trying to look at...
Fantasy baseball alert time. I'm going to talk about fantasy baseball. Before the season, I was actually toying with the idea of trading for Shane Green. Oops. Didn't do it. He got five saves already.
All of the Yankees' wins have come by more than one run, by the way. So okay. You could have been playing on the run line every day, and then your ROI would be a lot better.
Is that your recommendation? Play the Yankees on the run line the rest of the season.
Every day.
You will be a winner.
Every day.
That's a 5,000-star lock.
Winners, winners, winners. All day. Just do it. Why not? What do you got to lose?
That's great.
Also, bet Lipscomb second half. That's what I was just doing on the phone, so jump into that.
Okay. College basketball. There's a freebie. That might be a 10,000-star lock. Did you see – I don't know if anyone's doing it around here. Did you see that books in New Jersey catering to Phillies fans are offering bets, Phillies win and a Bryce home run?
The correlated parlay. I think
game one of the season. Did he have a home run game one of the season?
No.
So maybe it was game one of the Nat series. Phillies win, and Harper hits a home run. What do you think it was? It was a plus. It was a hefty plus.
Plus 350.
Plus 1,300.
What?
Second game
in
it went
first
to,
game, he was going to be swing. We knew what he was doing.
It was plus 1,300.
Wow.
Second game was plus 700.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that 350 would have been a terrible number, but I also assume that they'd be setting horrific numbers because they're probably not taking the no.
Right.
So you just put whatever number you want. People are still going to bet it. That seems to be ridiculous bookmaking to me.
But it's Atlantic City, so is anything ridiculous? You understand what they're doing, right?
No, they're
I think this first year is all about customer acquisition, so I think they're willing to take a freaking beating for loyalty.
Right, but what I'm saying is I think the average person there would see like 5-1 on that and be like, oh yeah, I'll do that.
But here's the thing: if you get that plus 1,300 the first time, are you not betting it like 10 more times and then losing?
Of course you are.
Yeah.
I agree with everything that you're saying, and I agree with the marketing strategy.
I get
of
your
it.
Point. You could still get away with plus 500,
100%,
and people would go freaking crazy over it.
100%, they would.
Yeah, I wanted to double check it. Win in a Harper home run was plus 1,300. Second game plus. 7:30, and as one Philly blog says, get on it before it's minus EV. Okay. They're getting the terminology.
Probably true. And by the way, imagine if you're like, you're cheering, you're late in the game, they're ahead, but you're cheering for them to give up a run and tie the game so that maybe he hits an extra inning home run if he hadn't hit one yet. That creates a lot of dramatic situations for you as a bettor.
Big Five is on the way. We are live here just down the street in the park from T-Mobile. Final home game of the season. Fan appreciation night for Vegas Golden Knights fans. Excellent Big Five on the way, including the good news that this playoff format, I mean, it is wonderful. It makes total sense. It's sticking around. Thanks, Gare.